This is CliffCentral.com.
There are interesting things that we want you to know about, and then we're very exciting things that we're launching this week. You can be a part of this journey with us. You know, I've often thought, imagine you are, and who doesn't know someone who's either been diagnosed with cancer or someone who has recently discovered that a relative or a friend, someone that they really care about has been diagnosed with cancer. Where do they go? Who do they talk to? How do they get information? How do you become someone who's empowered with this kind of info? And how do you do that in your own time? How do you get to do it quietly on your own, where you can listen to something again and again? You can get to meet the people who have the expertise. You get to share stories from other survivors. It's the kind of journey that's very private, and it's the kind of thing that you don't just get on television, in radio or in magazines or in any of those things. And who has the time, frankly, if you do find it? Well, podcasting is a way to solve that problem. So if you have something like this happening in your life, let's say you get diagnosed with breast cancer and you don't know what to do, you don't know who to talk to, you've only just got the information from your doctor, where do you go? Well, we've put together with Discovery a series, it's a number of episodes, on how you can go about understanding this problem, this situation that you find yourself in. The diagnosis itself, you'll hear opinions from the most learned people in the business, people like Dr. Carol Benn, who knows this like the back of her hand and has treated so many people. You'll hear survivor stories and how it's not an insurmountable problem. It'll help you to deal with all the various social and familial aspects to this, which people don't often discuss. And by the end of it, you'll hopefully be one of those people who knows what to do, what to say, what to think. And you won't feel so alone. I imagine that that's a useful way of dealing with this.
Absolutely.
And I think
it's so overwhelming.
I'm sure. And for many people, they wouldn't know where to start. So this will at least give you a place to start. And I'm very proud of the fact that we're doing this with Discovery. It's kind of a first of its kind in South Africa. And this morning, to talk about all the amazing information that Discovery has been putting together and the incredible trends that they can observe because of their unique position, and having all the information at their fingertips, which they do because of their enormous database of clients, I've got with us Gareth Friedlander and Chris Jones from Discovery Life and Discovery Health, each of them specifically from those two divisions. So gentlemen, first of all, congratulations on all the things that you guys are doing. I see Discovery's going into finance and going into investment and insurance, but really at the heart of it is the health and the life business. And what makes those so exciting is the fact that you now have millions and millions of people. They're giving you their information. You're able to figure out things about the health of South Africa and certainly the health of your clients that you weren't able to figure out before. And this is potentially where we will discover ways to treat and to understand and to diagnose and to finance better health for most South Africans and certainly for people who are clients of yours. So welcome, first of all. Gareth, nice to see you.
Thank you.
What are the trends that you're observing at the moment? And with all of this huge database of information, what are the things that are most relevant that you're discovering that you didn't know before?
Thanks, Gareth. So it's great to be here.
Sure. Thank you.
I think, you know, you've mentioned the fact that insurers in general will typically have the largest database around health and wellness information in the world, and obviously enables us to observe incredible trends. And perhaps more importantly, in the discovery space where you talked about vitality, not only the trends around where illnesses are going, but around how you can change behavior and impact those illnesses.
Absolutely. And you guys have really led the way there in international terms, not just locally.
Yeah, absolutely. In the cancer space specifically, the trends are quite frightening. I'll let Chris talk to some of the numbers.
Sure.
In more detail, but we've seen an enormous increase over the last decade or so, which in kind of actuarial terms is a very short space of time.
Yeah.
To see the types of numbers that we're seeing.
So Chris, you're with Discovery Health. I mean, you guys, you have the barometer, you have the stethoscope on all of us. So what are these trends that Gareth's talking about?
Thanks for having us. And I think as Gareth mentioned, it is pretty concerning some of the trends that we're seeing coming through. So at the moment in the medical scheme, there are about 1.5% of the members of the medical scheme are actively undergoing oncology treatment, which equates to about 40,000 lives, which is quite frightening, the number of individuals who are actively undergoing oncology treatment.
What percentage is that?
1.5% of members on Discovery Health medical scheme. So it's quite scary, the number of individuals, and that's increased by about 45% over the past 6-7 years. So you're continuing to see more and more individuals, unfortunately, who are requiring treatment from an oncology perspective. And I think it really just highlights the need for appropriate cover from a health insurance perspective, life insurance perspective, that when unfortunately you are diagnosed with something like cancer, that you're able to undergo the required treatment, that you've got that support that's there to help you through.
Sure. I mean, when you're going through it, you don't really care how many other people are, because you think, oh, well, why the hell did this happen to me? But let's talk particularly about cancers that affect women. What are we seeing on the life and health side? I mean, is there any good news? Are there decreases in the rate of women dying of cancer on the life claims side over the past few years?
Yeah, so there's some good and bad news. I think on the bad news side, we see amongst females about 48% of our severe illness claims were for cancer last year. So almost one in two kind of illnesses or diseases that females are picking up is cancer. On the good news side, our cancer-related death claims amongst females are declining quite rapidly. So we're seeing about a 31% decrease in cancer-related deaths over the last 5 years. So an increase in incidence, but an increase in survival as well, which really talks to treatment.
I mean, we'd rather hear that, right?
Yeah, could it not also be that people are being diagnosed earlier and being diagnosed full stop? Whereas in the past, it wasn't detected and people would get to the point where it was already terminal before they even knew.
That's exactly right.
It's definitely one of our theories from the medical scheme side, that amongst women, I think most prevalent type of cancer by far is breast cancer. And you are seeing an increasing proportion of women undergoing screening for breast cancer. Mm. So if it's been picked up, it has been picked up earlier. And I suppose that just helps the survival rates. There's some amazing member stories, I think, that hopefully we'll get into during the podcast at a later stage.
Absolutely. They're all in there, yeah.
I think probably skin cancers as well, that are really detected early. There's just such a great awareness in skincare products at the moment and looking after your skin in the sun and seeing dermatologists. So it's all kind of caught early.
Exactly. So early detection is a huge kind of trend and something that we're trying to encourage. And then treatment is obviously getting better as well. So detecting it earlier, but you kind of can't open a medical journal these days without seeing a new breakthrough drug for cancer that's coming out. So an enormous strides being made in the treatment space as well.
Oh, that is good news. All right, let's turn our attention from the women to the men now. Cancers that affect men. I mean, are we making any progress there on the life and the health side? Do we have information?
So from a health side, it's like with women, the supposed primary type of cancer, there's breast cancer. Amongst men, it's primarily prostate cancer. Uh-huh. For men, though, it's a lot later on of age that you typically developing prostate cancer. But I think, again, it's the concern is that more and more men are being diagnosed with prostate cancer. Gareth can maybe speak more to some of the survival rates that you do see.
So that's quite right in terms of age. We're seeing that kind of above like 50. Prostate cancer in men is about 55% of all cancers, so it becomes incredibly prevalent at those older ages.
Sure.
And then younger age males, you tend to see testicular cancer being pretty prevalent as well.
And are we seeing like survival rates going up there, just like we saw with breast cancer?
Yeah, we are. And again, it's the I don't have the numbers offhand on the prostate cancer survival rates, but again, early detection, you know, screening and treatment is
well. Driving. Let's just talk about that, because Discovery has a number of programs that they're obviously putting in place to help detect these things earlier. And have these been measurably and markedly making a difference?
So I think from the women's side that you can definitely see that we would encourage women, as an example, to go for a mammogram or to go for pap smears, etc. Mm-hmm. You have seen over the past 6-7 years seen an increase in the proportion of individuals going for screening. And the theory is that you do pick it up early. And I think it's one, by making it available through the medical scheme. And then secondly, from Vitality perspective, many of the members of the medical scheme are part of Vitality. They're being encouraged to regularly go for screening. And so it just helps them to pick it up at an earlier stage. So I think there is a good news story on that side.
Now, there's a lot of research into cancer treatment, and you mentioned this, Gareth, just a minute ago about these breakthrough drugs. The high cost of these drugs is just incredible, though. And a lot of people imagine that if they are covered for one particular thing, that they're covered for everything. And obviously, your actuaries are hard at work trying to figure out what is and isn't doable, because some of this stuff is outrageously expensive and very experimental. And some of it is, you know, tried and tested, and probably the cost has come down because it's being used more universally. So how exactly do you guys figure all this stuff out?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. So there's an entire spectrum, right? So you kind of get your high cost drugs, but that are past the experimental phase. Mm-hmm. Then you get these kind of high cost new age drugs that are coming out all the time that are probably still classed as experimental, mm-hmm. probably only available overseas. Chris will have more detail on the actual costs, but you know, these types of drugs, when you tend to have to go overseas to get access to them to go for treatment, can be into the millions in some cases when you consider all the additional costs that come along with that. Yeah. Transporting your family and accommodation in dollars, and those types of costs can be exorbitant. And I guess, again, that talks to the need for cover. So obviously on the medical aid side, we try to cover as much as you can, but you can't cover everything in this space. And you know, that's what I guess severe illness cover is for, to give yourself the best chance. And, you know, I think if any of us were in these positions, or even worse, had a child who was in one of these positions, mm-hmm. you'd want to give that child the absolute best treatment in the world at kind of any price. So that's what we design in the products for, creating features on the products that enable a boost to the sum assured if you need to go for treatment overseas, and those types of things.
Maybe if I can just give you an example of how the costs have changed over the last few years. That,
sure.
Again, going into breast cancer, but there's a certain type of breast cancer where back in the day, chemotherapy would have been the type of treatment that you undergo. That's maybe about 40,000 grand for a course of chemotherapy. Nowadays, for that specific type of breast cancer, you could access a drug called Herceptin, which costs about 335,000 grand. So it's significantly more expensive, but it has a phenomenal impact on certain types of members who've had that. So for those members, the question is, how do they get access to it? From a medical scheme perspective, though, the question is, how do you give members access to it, but do it in a sustainable manner? Because ultimately, I suppose that the money of the medical scheme, it belongs to all the members, and you want to make sure that you, giving appropriate access to members there. So a lot of the time, we're working with the various different pharmaceutical companies to try and bring down the cost of these advanced treatments that are being brought into South Africa, just to make them more accessible to members. And then, as Gareth mentioned, the fact that the role of life cover, that where a member might have shortfalls or co-payments, that's where life cover can come in to help them get access to these latest advanced treatments.
I'm also curious, like with cancer as opposed to some of the other things, it does come back. I mean, people go into remission, and then later on there's the ugly situation rears its head again, and then they have to, you know, repeatedly seek treatment, and sometimes 2-3 times in their lifetime. And I would imagine that the costs there are also prohibitive in some cases. So what do you guys do?
Yeah, so the trends around relapse are quite staggering. Of our multiple claimants last year, where the first claim was cancer, 77% of the time the second claim was also cancer. So you do tend to see those relapses coming through, sadly. And you know, for I guess many of our listeners would have been in a situation where they've had someone in the family go through that. I think sometimes the relapse can be almost more devastating than the initial
diagnosis. Yeah, and the treatment has to be more aggressive.
Exactly right. Even if it comes back at a lower stage, you tend to treat it more aggressively if it's a relapse. So that is a serious consideration to deal with. And we developed a product recently, about a year ago, where we introduced the first cancer relapse benefit globally on our severe illness product. So typically severe illness products will pay for one progression of cancer but won't pay more than 100% of the sum assured. We've now got a product where we'll pay for up to two relapses to up to 365% of the sum assured, really recognizing the financial impact of a relapse on our members' lives.
And obviously taking into consideration that these people would be more than willing to pay for that in advance if they knew that it was going to happen because they've been through it before.
Exactly.
Those, those are the people who know that there's an advantage to being prepared for these things.
Yep.
So how close are we to sorting this cancer thing out? Because I read some article the other day about another miracle drug.
The Israelis seem to be making the news lately with their treatments. Yeah.
I mean, is there any chance in hell that during our lifetimes we'll be able to find comprehensive cures for some of these cancers?
$1 million question, I guess.
You guys are at the forefront. You're constantly attending all kinds of conventions all over the world and speaking to the smartest doctors. I mean, what do you know?
Yeah, look, the rate of progress is incredible. So they're making exponential progress in kind of finding new drugs. I don't think we're anywhere close to kind of a ubiquitous cure for cancer that cures all types of cancers. I think what we're starting to do is really super specialize in the type of treatment. So treating a very particular type of cancer in a particular space, and they're making progress in that way. Who knows, so many types,
that's the thing.
Yeah. Exactly. I think it's also important just to differentiate between maybe the cure versus increasing survival rates, making sure that members can, you can assist with the cancer. And that's what we are seeing, that there's definitely increase in survival rates, which is positive. So crystal ball, hopefully you continue to see that.
Give you many more years of meaningful life, even if you are diagnosed with it and do manage to beat it early on.
Yes.
But I mean, this is very hopeful because 50 years ago, none of this stuff was happening. There was no way anyone knew what to do. It was kind of, that was the death knell.
Absolutely. So it's not only the drugs, as we talked about earlier, the screening, the early detection, together with the type of lifestyle that one needs to live once you are suffering with cancer. So I think you're kind of attacking it on all ends, and hopefully that impacts survival and quality of life post a cancer diagnosis.
And are people also changing their lifestyles? I mean, you guys have oversight into what's going on with Vitality, for example, so you can monitor behavior. Are people starting to take this stuff seriously and finding reasons to cut the carcinogens out of their diet, to stop smoking, to start looking after themselves, be a little healthier, avoid obvious risks? Is that happening?
To some extent, but probably not as much as we had wanted. I think they're always individuals, I suppose, who are starting to lead a healthier lifestyle. I think the issue is just when you look at the South African population in general, that there's relatively high levels of obesity, poor diet, physical inactivity, etc., which when you're looking at certain types of cancers that do have lifestyle links, that's where the concern comes in. Not all cancers, I suppose, do have those lifestyle links, but there are definitely some cancers that do have lifestyle links. And that's what a member, I suppose, can focus on. How do you live a healthier lifestyle that you're then less at risk of certain types of cancers? Unfortunately, I suppose it would be amazing if every member lived a healthier lifestyle. It doesn't necessarily always happen, but there are very good news stories or positive stories where members have changed their lifestyle and it's been positive to them, reducing the risk.
What other exciting and interesting things have you discovered just looking at the numbers? Because you have all this data, you have all this information. Are there other areas that you've applied various models to and discovered things about the health of the average member in South Africa, what people aren't doing and what they are doing that they should be taking cognizance of? I mean, are there things there that you, because you have this amazing database of information, that you guys are uniquely placed to interpret?
Yeah, so I think for me the exciting part is really the behavioral side of it and trying to understand what types of incentives one needs to put in place to change that behavior. So we're seeing with you know, small things like active rewards where you get a coffee a week or mm-hmm. a smoothie or whatever it might be, that's tended to increase physical activity by about 25% around the world.
People have been persuaded to move around a bit. They really, get a quick coffee.
They really want that smoothie.
Hey? Exactly. Yeah, it's quite remarkable what you do tend to see and how you can change that behavior. So I think we're learning all the time around how do you make those rewards more personalized, more relevant to people, and kind of more real time. And all of that is having a huge impact in terms of behavior change. So we're seeing that come through in increased physical activity, more eating of kind of healthy food. Smoking levels are down slightly. It's hard to
break that habit.
It's hard to break that habit. I think we're still working really hard in that space. And you see that come through in lower claims. You genuinely see that the members who engage tend to have on the life side about a 50 to 60% lower mortality rate. So obviously die later. There's been a huge impact, and I think that's incredibly encouraging. But we're continuing to learn.
And I would imagine also doctors find this stuff very interesting, because doctors are now able to share information across continents and in massive ways that they couldn't do before. So if a doctor discovered some kind of breakthrough somewhere and they didn't have enough information to back up their discovery, now they'd be able to, using you know, various amounts of information from all over the world, they'd be able to put that up on a chart and compare things and figure out what the cause of a particular cancer might have been, what it could be linked to, what kinds of lifestyle things the various patients across a very broad spectrum of things could be compared with. I mean, ultimately, this is the way to do research in its purest form.
Definitely. I think the information that's available nowadays, it's amazing, and I think it's just continuing to use that to understand where to focus, what are the key areas from a scheme perspective, from a life perspective, where can you have the greatest impact from a member perspective. And I think that's why where you do see some of the changes, year-on-year changes to the various different benefits, I think that's been driven by us having a better understanding or appreciation of our members. And I think the same must go from a research perspective.
And then you've got things like you're doing, you know, people's whole genome and sequencing, this kind of thing. That cancer is something which happens at the cellular and at the DNA level. So the more information we have, the likelier we are to make these breakthroughs. And I would imagine some researchers all over the world are in a hurry to access that database of yours. Yes, and compare markers on various people's genomes and all the rest.
Exactly right. It's all a data game, right? Yeah. You know, all sorts of researchers approach us on an ongoing basis, trying to validate trials, do empirical mm-hmm. studies, and that's something that we work with them on an ongoing basis. And the more data we can collect and understand, the more chance there is of a real breakthrough and of real progress.
Well, congratulations on everything you guys have done so far. I'm very excited about this series that we're launching. Hopefully it will help many people to get into a better understanding. It'll help them to deal with things from an emotional point of view. It'll help them to hear other opinions. And for people who feel very alone, and for people who feel that they might be the only one going through this, this will make them feel a little less so. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Great to be
Gareth here. Friedlander and Chris Jones, both of them from Discovery. Gareth's from Discovery Life and Chris is from Discovery Health. Thank you for joining us this morning. If you want to hear the podcast series, we're going to put it out so that you can binge if you like, or you can listen to one episode at a time, you know, however you'd like to go through that, and pass it on to friends and family so that they can hear it too. And who knows, you might just make someone a little less anxious and nervous about what they've just been presented with. Might help them to deal with everything.
Yeah, I mean, medical aids seem to be this kind of dark space in a lot of people's minds. You can't understand them. The algorithms that are used are so confusing. But just through my own personal experience with my mom, who was hospitalized for over a year, and the ease of claiming and the way it worked there was just mind-blowing. It was just amazing. I mean, we ended up putting in a 1.7 million rand claim, and all we paid for was a pair of boots, you know, for stability. But it was enlightening and made me realize the real importance of having a medical aid for those situations where you're going to have these enormous claims.
That was Discovery.
And that was Discovery, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, again, on another personal level, I've just had a sleep test, which Discovery paid for, and been diagnosed with severe apnea. And I now have a machine.
She's carrying around equipment like you cannot believe she's got a wheelbarrow that she has to take this out with on her way out.
But it's preventative. I mean, it's probably saving me from, you know, heart issues and all sorts of things. So, I just appreciate that.
Well, it's good to understand these things. This in particular is about oncology, and you'll be able to listen to all of the episodes. We'll release them a little bit later this week. In fact, today I think we're going to start with the series. So, keep an eye on cliffcentral.com for more information, and we will send out a whole lot of reminders too as the episodes become available. But don't miss this special series brought to you by Discovery on oncology, especially for you.
This is cliffcentral.com.